walks the walk and talks the talk, and everything from like his career and his hobbies and his social life and his actual program is all recovery. It's kind of like, it's just amazing. But I'll let him talk about himself. And yeah, so I'd like to introduce David I.
My name is Alfred Hitchcock, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. After tonight's entertainment, there will be a lot of divorces. Child custody battles, a lot of alcoholism, STFUing, and roller skating. Yeah! I just had to do that. I was driving and I was like, I could hear the Alfred Hitchcock theme in my head, and I thought, man, what a life I've lived. What a life. My name is David and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. Man, I'm really grateful to be here. I got my mom in the front audience, so I'm not going to be able to talk too much. I don't want to re-traumatize her. I would have brought my ex-wife, but I think we would have had more problems. I want to welcome the newcomers. They used to tell me 5 years ago when I got into the program, you know, I was going through a divorce and I was going through custody battle challenges, and I was not roller skating at the time. My sponsor can remember me well, and I was a mess. You know, I was a real mess, and people used to tell me, the long timers used to always tell me, because I did not feel welcomed here in my own head. You know, like my head was telling me I don't belong here. I didn't understand why I was here. Somebody told me I needed Al-Anon and I had to come, and I came. I was like, well, F it, whatever I can do. And I would hear them say, the newcomer is the lifeblood of the program, and we're grateful to have you here. And that was a really special moment, because they had to tell me that a lot. Yeah. Navidad, Luis, he was talking about, you know, going again and again, and how long, you know, our sponsors and all of our support network, you know, help us out. And I'm so glad that the long timers kept welcoming me. So I want to welcome the newcomers. And can you guys hear me okay? Yeah. You hear me okay? So if I talk louder like this and I start talking fast, you gonna be able to keep up? No, I'm from New York City. And thank you. We talk fast there, but they listen faster. And now here they talk slow and they listen slower. So I'm trying to find my medium right now. I'm a little nervous and excited, and I have some wonderful friends in the audience. And so for the newcomers, I put together a list. 10 reasons why you might qualify for Al-Anon, just in case you're questioning it. The first one is the alcoholic drinks and you get high. I got one laugh. I knew it was a dry audience today. I was like, damn it. Damn it. They didn't laugh at David's jokes. I'm dead. Number two, your preteen kids are walking around talking about which beer and marijuana they prefer. Three, at work, you called your boss an alcoholic and refused to apologize because you knew you were right. This is California. You get unemployment here. Four, one of your siblings gets on your nerves for never returning your call. They once told you they prefer to enjoy their evening drinking instead of listening to you complain about life. Oh, I've heard that. I heard people talk about that. You know, I've heard a lot of people share with me stuff. Five, you keep a ledger of all the effed up things your spouse does on a daily basis, Then you read it to them before they sleep. That one's for Timothy. I'm telling you, I heard this stuff. I heard it. I've done most of it myself. Number six, you watch your alcoholic drinking, but you never have any. Yes. If that makes sense to the alcoholics, probably. Whoever's laughing is in another program. Seven, one of your parents got sober in AA years ago, but now you have an issue with their eating habits. Number eight, during your first meeting, you feel you don't have any issues with alcoholics, but your AA sponsor sent you here. It's okay to laugh. Nine is, because you have recently tried to, want to, or you're worried, you're going to kill an alcoholic. You're in the right place. That's what got me here. And number 10, your spouse has 6 DUIs, pancreatitis of the liver, 2 mistresses, and you're starting to think that they might have some alcohol issues. I'm just saying. Am I talking too loud? Oh. Just saying. Anyway, I'm going to speak at the convention on April 1st at 7 p.m. And I want to hash these out a little bit. Be fun. All right? This is my work account. So if you got any, keep them coming. I'll be taking note. Yeah. It's not a typical Al-Anon lead because I'm not a typical Al-Anon member. My mom's reminded me of that the other day. She was like, you know, Al-Anon members don't really curse. And I was like, okay, I think that's a hint. Yeah. But I love my mom. I'm grateful to have her here. I want to give a special thanks to the long-timers. You know, if you didn't keep coming back, there'd be no program. And I feel sincerely from my heart that I owe my life to you. And I'm really grateful. Al-Anon is the foundation of my programs. Notice the plural there. They say if you're not in a minimum of 3 programs, you're in denial. And so Al-Anon has always been my foundation. And I've been really lucky to really work an Al-Anon program most of the time. I want to thank also Jack for teaching me how to use the service manual. I was standing in Jack's garage on Christmas, and I looked inside, and I was like, fudge, man. I had this epiphany, and I saw myself asking Jack to tell him, I need you to teach me how to be a man. How do I use a hammer and a drill? Because I have no idea. I don't know why, I'm just not good with it. You give me a pen, you give me a dance floor, you know, you give me certain things and I love it, I got it. But you give me a drill and a hammer and it's like, oh my God, I can't do it. I just can't do it. I'm trying. But, and I want to, I also, I wanted to thank Josiah for starting to use the microphone. He's got good things to say, you know, I like to hear him, you know? And I wanted to thank Carl for working with Josiah before he had the garage. And Serenity Joe, I want to thank Serenity Joe. I used to follow him around when I first got into program, and I would hear him share, and I'd be like, wherever that guy goes, I'm secretly following him. And I had the most interesting way of approaching him. I'd be like, hey, Joe, what meeting are you going to next? Yeah. And he'd tell me, and I'd show up. I'd be like, oh, hey, you're over here. How you doing? How's it going? Hey. So I'm really grateful. I love Serenity Joe. He's a good man. I don't think he's here today. I think he's sick. I checked in on him the other day. I go, hey, you still alive? Are you still alive? I hadn't seen him for a few weeks. He's still alive. He's kicking. He'll be back. And I love Joe. And Harriet and Christy, I'm really grateful to them. I would see Harriet, and I remember one of the first times I saw her, I came in a program. Yeah, I'm an alcoholic child. I grew up in an alcoholic home, I should say. I'm an adult child of an alcoholic. And that was a scary environment to grow up in. And I remember when she grabbed me one day, and she was like, and she's this little short lady, you know? And she's like, you've survived, and now you will thrive. It was just like impressed it on me. You know, I just was like, you know, I knew I had hope at that moment. She like seethed it into my spirit. You know? I'm grateful to her and to all the times I've gotten to call her and tell her I love her. You know, I got to tell her I love her. And I'm grateful to Willie, another long-timer in program that I'm really blessed. My came in the program, there was a man, well, first of all, we have child's care, and that's really important. I think we're the only men's meeting in the world in Al-Anon that has child's care, and that's really cool. You know, as a father that was going through a divorce, I needed to come here, and I didn't want to lose time with my kid either, and I needed just like an hour here, hour and a half, and I got to bring my kid here, and that was amazing. And the dads I met out of that, which I'll talk about in a little bit, but I'm really grateful for that. And also, I hadn't been to a funeral in like 25 years. My cousin was schizophrenic, and he was a drug dealer. And he was from Brooklyn. That's what happens to people from Brooklyn. No, I'm joking. Sorry. I shouldn't say that. I'm sorry. That was low. God rest his soul. I grew up in the neighborhood, and I sold drugs myself. So believe me, I've been around the cuff. And I'll share a little bit on that. Not too much, because I know I'm going to horrify half the room. And, you know, Al-Anon is like the PTSD program. You know, that's why we're looking for serenity. So I don't want to mess with people's serenity. That's right. Whenever somebody says they're an alcoholic by accident, everybody's like, ah, ah, ah. But you know, on a serious tip, I was when I came into program, I came into this room and there was a man that had a sailing hat, and I told him, "Oh man, I love sailing. I haven't been sailing in years." And he was like, "You haven't been sailing? This Sunday, what are you doing?" And I was like, "Nothing." He's like, "Meet me at an Oxnard. I'm going to take you sailing." And it was amazing. He took me sailing, and then we had these beautiful conversations, and then he kept taking me. He was like, "We're going again next weekend, kid. Come on out." And I'm like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Nothing. I got nothing to do." So I'd go back out, and like a few months into that, we were sitting on the sail, and he said, "Dave, I have brain cancer." Yeah, and he said, "I'm going to pass away in a few months. They've only told me that he had a few months to live," is what he told me. And I was shocked. You know, I really had an appreciation for his spirit. And he said, I would like you to be by my deathbed. We're going to do a meeting in my house." And that was very intimidating for me, because my only experience, I've lost friends to death. I had, in fourth grade, my friends started dying. One kid died in fourth grade, and I'll never forget it. We did it before. Planted a tree for him, you know. And then I had, you know, my cousin died, and at the cemetery, went to a Greek cemetery, which is like people screaming in the room and crying and wailing, and you know, it was traumatizing. And I was in the back with my little brother, and I remember us laughing. You know, like that's how I learned from my father. It's sad to say, but you know, my father was a crazy, reckless alcoholic, and he laughed at stuff, and I learned that. And I was scared to be vulnerable. That's really what it is. And I ended up. First of all, getting worried that I didn't know what that would look like. You know, it's sad to see somebody pass away. And I lost friends, and friends have been incarcerated for years. My whole life was losing people. I lost a lot. You know, and I grew up as in an alcoholic home where there was a lot of isolation and loneliness. But I just told him, yeah. I said, "I'll be there." He said, "Willie's going to be there, and Mike, and a few guys." And I was like, "Oh, I'd be honored. You know, and I kept thinking of the guys in this room that kept saying, "Hey, just say yes. Just say yes. Just say yes." And I went, you know, to his deathbed, and I got to see Willie and Mike F, and you know, it was amazing, like just to hold this guy's heart and be there and do a meeting together. We just took the program there, you know, and then slowly watch him wither away. So God rest his soul. He was a beautiful man, and I'm really grateful that he gave me the opportunity, and I got to see the men in the meeting show up at that level. You know, I never saw men do that. I even, you know, was among people that did a lot of bad and illegal things. And I never saw a heart like that, you know, like people caring for each other like that, that level. So I'm grateful to Willie. Also, I have when I came into the program, there was a guy that was doing the coffee. He went by the name of Coffee Chris. And he came up to me, and it was like my first time in here, and I thought, "Oh my God, this guy's going to talk to me." I used to wear a hat, and I was all like coming in like that. And he said, he goes, "Hey, how you doing? My name is Chris." And we started talking, and he was like, "Yeah, me too." And then I started telling him more stuff. He said, "Yeah, me too." And I tell him more stuff. He's like, "Yeah, yeah, me too." You know. And we just had like a real heart-to-heart conversation, and it was amazing. He told me, "Dave, let's hang out. Let's do fellowship. You got a kid? My kid is like, we could come out. We'll hang out. You don't have to go through this divorce." You know, I was torn up when I went through that. And we started hanging out on a weekly basis. And they kept talking about his buddy Rudy. He was like, "You got to meet Rudy. You're going to like Rudy." And I was like, "All right, whenever I meet Rudy, I'm going to meet Rudy." And it took like 2 years before I met Rudy. But you know, it was amazing because the three of us would hang out and we started doing a lot of fellowship, and it was dads with recovery, with open hearts, with love, with vulnerability, that would share fears and pains, and we would, you know, hold each other's hand in a sense through problems, and we would have fun at the same time. You know, it's amazing. We'd be at playgrounds, we went to the beach, you know, you name it, bowling, whatever it is. And then that evolved into a daddy's group, which has about 35 dads now. You know, we have about 35 dads in the daddy's group. Not everybody shows up, but we used to hang out every month, and it's been a few weeks since we have, but this summer we got to go, you know, camping, and we got to do so much. I mean, it was just amazing. So I'm really grateful to the dads, to Chris and Rudy. This is going to be one long intro. I didn't think I'd do this gratitude so long, but, you know, it means a lot to me, so I just want to come from a thanks tonight. I want to thank Patrick, who taught me how to flush the toilet bowl in my head. That was one of the first things he told me when I met him. I go, "Yeah, how you doing?" He goes, "Just flushing the toilet bowl in my head." And I was like, "Yeah, I like this guy. I like this program." And then it was really cool. You know, he had suggested I go to college, which was my sponsor's. I'm going to be bouncing around a little bit. It was my sponsor's suggestion, and then I went through this phase where I got into program. I never went to college. I was 35 when I came into Al-Anon. I'm going to be 40 this year. And this is the beginning of my 40th birthday. In May, I celebrate, but I'm bringing it in now, you know. He told me he said, you know, check out school. And I was like, wow, I never knew school would be an option. And I want to also thank my sponsor. When I got into this program, it was January of 2011. And it was amazing. You know, I came in, I was scared, I was crying a lot. And I came to meetings 7 days a week. There was a Lebanese guy, on my very first Al-Anon meeting, there was a Lebanese guy at the front door down in Hollywood. And my ex-wife is Lebanese, and my father's Middle Eastern. And my mother's Greek, I have a mix. I was born and raised in New York City. And I saw this guy there, and I thought, who's here so early? You know, like, why would somebody be here so early? That was my complaint in my head. Like, imagine, I was there an hour early, and I'm pointing my finger at that guy. But that didn't make sense. Yeah. You know, he said, I went up to him, he greeted me immediately, and he was like, "Hey, man, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah." We started talking, and it was amazing. We sat down, and then I said, "Where's your accent from? It sounds like you're from some foreign country." And he was like, "Well, where are you from? You sound like foreign country." And then he told me Lebanon, and I was like, "Hey, my ex-wife is from Lebanon." Like, just imagine that. You know, I like to call it a God shot. Whether you believe in it or not, you know, if it's odd, it's God, or whatever you want to call it, coincidences. But it was really neat, you know, to have that moment. The first person I meet in this program is somebody from like a, sort of like a home. And I just thought like, wow. And when I heard him say that, I swear to God, I felt, and I'm not religious, but I'm very spiritual now. But I just felt like this is unique. What's the probability that this guy would be here? It's like one in a trillion. There's not even a lot of Middle Eastern people in program, right? There's not even a lot of Middle Easterns. Like, what would that one thing be, right? So then he told me, like, "Hey, you got to go to a lot of meetings. You got to go to a lot of meetings." He was like, "You got to go to meetings 7 days a week." And he sat me down next to him, and he told me about the Daily Reader one day at a time. And I remember I started hearing slogans and stories from that, and I started crying. I just cried because I saw my whole upbringing, like, just fall right out of my psyche. The whole room looked different. You know, and it took me all the way back to when I was like 10 years old. And I remembered, like, oh shit, I grew up in an alcoholic home. You know, that was a mystery to me, I guess. And I remember, you know, I was sitting in that room and I was like warped. And I remember being in front of my TV set all by myself. You know, I used to be a latchkey kid. So, and I saw it in the New York Times one time, an article when I was young. I was in like fourth grade and I thought, man, that's me. Like, I'm one of these kids, you know. And I can remember my dad's drunkenness all the time and the insanity of the home and watching him jump out of a window, second floor, little house, you know, and hearing my mom, my poor mom, screaming and crying. Really, really, really overwhelmed me that first meeting. And I just couldn't stop crying. I was just, I had even been to, I've been to, I went to therapy for a while. And that never came up once in a therapy session. I just didn't have good therapists. I wish I did. Maybe I'd never make it here. No, I'm joking. I think I was lucky, you know, because I got here instead, and like my pain was so deep. Like the deeper you come in pain is like the deeper your roots will go into recovery in a 12-step, you know, room, especially when you raise your hand and you get that vulnerable and you give opportunity for people to come up to you and nurture you and, you know, give you love that you might have never even had, or even empathy to be like, yeah, that's me. I've been through that. I've gone through that. I've been there. And, you know, it was amazing to just cry in that meeting and, like, see my whole youth revolve around me. This is how my mind works. So I told my friend, now mind you, I was going through a divorce. I was in this painful, you know, place, and the room there was all Hollywood women. You know, it's just women from Hollywood. It was like 80 women in one meeting, you know? And I look at my buddy and I said, hey, can you take me to more female meetings? There's a lot of beautiful women here, it's inspiring. And he was like, well, yeah, sure, sure. And then the next day he took me to a gay meeting. And then I was like, hey, man, I don't want to be in the gay meeting, man. It's not cool. Like, you know, as a woman, man, I'm going through a divorce. I got a lot of problems right now. You know, they're going to help me out, man. And he was like, don't worry, Habibi. Sit down. Sit down. You know? So I sat down. And minute this person started sharing, and I heard the slogans, and I heard the steps, and I heard stuff, and I just started crying again. And then the speaker, the leader of that meeting, shared like I felt that was me talking, and I didn't matter what gender preference he had or what culture he was, you know, I just bawled, I cried, and I told him like, that was amazing, man, that was just the most beautiful thing I ever heard. And I told him, now tomorrow take me to a female meeting, please. And then he took me to one of those other love addiction programs the next day. It was gay men in love addiction. And I was like, come on, man, you're making it difficult on me. He's like, don't worry, we go hiking, we talk, don't worry. Don't worry. Keep coming back. And I was like, all right, man. Yeah. And then a few weeks later, he told me he was gay. And he told me he never had told that to anybody, he didn't feel safe. And it meant a lot to tell that to me. And I was like, man, I love you. I don't care what you are. Dude. You know, I almost told him, I'll make love to you too, man. I'm pretty horny. I was like, don't matter at this point. Sorry, I warned you. My mom gave me the disclosure. I was coming. So I got foul over here. Sorry. All right. Sorry. I got a long list of thanks. I'm not finished yet. So then we kept going. And then he told me like a month later, he was like, you need a sponsor. You need help, man. He's like, you talk too much. And I was like, hey, I like your honesty. You know, I'd always babble about my ex-wife. And I was like, my ex-wife and blah, 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 blah. I heard Roger one time say, blah, 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 me, means blame. That's blame. Get off the blah, get off the me, you know? And then he said, get the sponsor. And, you know, I was in Pasadena, and it was amazing. I walk into a room, and I heard, you know, somebody share, and I just loved the energy of this person and their spirit. You know, they just had a beautiful, beautiful light to them. And I just felt probably the safest I ever felt, you know, besides my own mom. The safest I ever felt with somebody, besides my own daughter when she was a baby, you know, and I could feel safe with another man. I never had a safety level. You know, I grew up in the streets. I mean, I really did. It was a crazy life, and it wasn't my choice. It was my own disease. You know, I left my home. I'll never forget. My mom took me to an Al-Anon, Al-Teen meeting, and she was like, don't worry, you're going to love this. You know, I was like 10 years, 11 years old. She was going every day, and I heard the guy, you know, I'm just going to go on a quick tangent. I heard the guy say, the sponsor was going around the room and he said, how about you? Do you think your father's an alcoholic? I was like, fuck yeah, my dad's an alcoholic. Fuck this, I'm done. You know, not like that, but I did tell him, I said, my father's an alcoholic. I see him drunk all the time. And for some reason, I just interpreted that the guy was telling me, you've graduated and you can leave now. I'll never forget. I walked out of the church. And it was this beautiful, like cobblestone church at nighttime in Queens, and it was, I don't know if it was a cool night, but I just remember I saw my mom coming out. She had that nice Al-Anon glow after a really good meeting. And she's like, "How was the meeting? How was the meeting?" And I was like, "Yeah, the guy told me I don't have to come back." And I grew up reading my mom's One Day at a Time. And I grew up hearing her cry and the pain that my dad put it through. And I'd read the One Day at a Time. And I'd always, I loved the literature. When I was really young, I've always loved reading. And I loved the poetry in it. When my buddy told me, he told me, "Hey, take this," he gave me a reader and he said, put all the good stuff you hear at meetings on the inset and read it every day, Dave, you know. And then he said, "And then get the sponsor." And I was like, "Yeah, I'm gonna get a sponsor." And so I walked through this meeting, I saw this beautiful man there. I just loved his energy, and I thought, somebody had told me, like, pick somebody that you want what they got. And I was like, I just like that energy. Like, I wanna evolve. I wanna be able to, you know, have something like that. And then I asked, and it wasn't Harry, it was another lady. I said, "Hey, the guy that just led the meeting, is that a good man to have as a sponsor?" And she was like, "Oh yeah, that's a nice man. He's a nice man." So, you know, I went and I asked him, and it was beautiful. You know, I just felt like I had found a good spirit in my life. And in a sense, the ancient yogas called it guru. It meant, guru means remover, and guru means darkness. And guru is remover of darkness. You know, I feel like a good sponsor sort of brings the Al-Anon spirit, the Al-Anon light, and the principles. And when I met my sponsor, I felt like he just had, you know, good principles. And it was awesome because we started meeting every week, you know, and he took me through the steps. We'd go eat dinner. We'd eat dinner. I remember the first day we met, we were at Cafe Tropical, and the down in Sunset on down by Echo Park. And I went in there and I was like, "Oh, this guy's pretty cool for an older man. You know, he's hanging out in this nifty spot and he knows how to use technology." I was like, "I picked a good dude." Yeah. And, you know, we sat down and I had gotten the Paths to Recovery book. He said, "I'll walk you through the book and we'll do the step work and stuff." And I just remember sitting down and I started doing the blah, blah, blah. I'm telling him, "Hey, you know, I want to kill my dad. I hate my dad. The guy's a bum. You know, I grew up with this freak. I'm tired of this shit, man." And he said, he looked at me and he said, "You know, you're powerless over the alcoholic in your life. And when you try and control him, it'll become emotionally unmanageable. And you'll spin out time and again, you know." And I was like, that made sense. You know, so I tried the next thing. I said, "Well, how about my ex-wife? I'm tired of her." And he said, "Well, you're powerless, you know, over her, and if you punch walls and scream at her, it's not gonna work." And I was like, "You mean punching walls won't make her stop?" You know, like, I really had that thought. I really thought that if I punch a wall and scream, I could make my ex-wife stop raging at me, because she's a rageaholic, and that was like my second qualifier, you know? And then I just remember just being able to start looking at life, and he was like, "You know, it's principles above personalities. That's what the program is teaching us, principles above personalities. And every time you're in an old personality, you're going to do old things that are going to hurt you and people around you. And when you live by principles and you do better things, then life gets better and relationships will improve too." And I was still like, that was an interesting concept. It was still conceptual, but in some moments I really got it for just a second. And then it would disappear by like the time I left the cafe, it would go right out of my head. And I'd be like, "But wait, punching the walls was a good thing. It was a good thing, you know." But it was never a good thing. And, you know, I got to work with my sponsor. And we got to meet every week. We'd go see a movie on like a Saturday or Sunday. We'd eat dinner. He'd walk me through a step. We'd read Paths to Recovery together. And then I would do writing assignments. And then he would help me see things differently. And it was amazing. You know, like, to have somebody just show up like that. I always expected him to say, "Okay, that was $300 for that session. You're really sick and I have to charge you double." We spent 5 hours trying to crack this nugget. And he never did that. And I remember, it was our very first time. He just said, "Just make me a promise to keep passing it on." And that was really significant for me. You know, I came in with a lot of emotional pain. So we were talking recently, him and I, and he said, "I don't remember some of this stuff. Are you making it up?" And I was like, no, I've been saying the same story for 5 years, you know? But I came in like really hurt. So for me, like every moment, and I used to read the same stuff every day that I would hear. I'd take notes in our session, and I'd take notes now and reflect on it. And I'd try and apply it in my day at some point. You know, it says practice these principles in all of our affairs. So I was like, well, how about if I start actually putting this into like the forefront of my mind? You know, they say top of mind, top of sight. And I thought, I gotta put this out there. Like, let me filter my day through some of this intelligent wisdom that's here. And it was great because he took me through the steps, the traditions, and the concepts of service. And it took like a year and a half for us to get through the whole book. And I was really lucky. I remember only one time or twice, I remember I texted him and I was like, you know, I can't make it today. And he had good boundaries. He's like, you know, I come here to help you out, and if you can't make it, that's rude. And I was like, damn it, I'm never going to do that again. You know, and I even thought, I want to be able to do boundaries like that. That was pretty cool. He just expressed himself. You know, he came from a place, he's like, hey, that's frustrating, I'm hurt, that's not fair, I'm going to be here for you. And you know, I was a pretty selfish kid. I mean, I grew up in survival. So I'm really grateful to my sponsor. It's been an amazing journey. And I end up sponsoring people. I have my first sponsee in the room, you know, a beautiful soul who went through a lot of challenges growing up also, and we were able to identify and heal. And you know, I was intimidated at first. I tell my sponsor, like, I don't know what to do. You know, as he was just like, show up, you know, just show up and be there for somebody. And it's been amazing. You know, it's like the community that's evolved out of this fellowship for me has been fascinating. Like to be able to go, you know, this summer and go to Sequoias with like 6 or 7 dads and like 12 kids, or however many of us there were, and like to have our camping gear together, like all in this beautiful park. Well, that was last year. We went this year to Buckhorn, and you know, we got to like hike, and the kids loved it. You know, and the time, how many times we've gone to the beach with Jared, and you know, all the different friends I have in the room, the different dads that show up in their kids' life. You know, last time I was joking, this is the kind of room where men show up in other kids' lives, you know, that they don't have a dad, so they'll be like, I'm your dad, you know, don't worry about it, I'm raising you. Yeah, that's the kind of men that are in this meeting. They have that big of a heart, that they raise kids unconditionally, you know. And it's never perfect, it's progress, not perfection. My first step, also, I've evolved my first step to me to mean, you know, I'm human, I'm always going to have challenges, but I don't have to act crazy, right? And once in a while, I want to take back a little weird stuff, and I try not to, and then if God forbid I do, I have the steps to give me clarity again. And I have the traditions to show me how to show up in the world around me, not just my meetings, but even I was taught through this room, I would keep hearing guys share about the traditions and how they apply it to their marriages, to their relationships, to their families. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. You know, first one says our common welfare comes first. And I was like, well, our common welfare, it's not my welfare. You know, it's not just me, you know, it's all of us in this together. So it's equal vote, you know. I try to do that with my 7-year-old, but sometimes it's not fair, you know. She's like, no, we get chocolate cake this morning. I was like, no chocolate cake. Let's vote, Dad. No voting on that one. And I'm also grateful to the Ohio's and the Juanitos and the Oscars and the Jareds and the Chris and the Pauls and the Rogers, you know, all you amazing men, the Jonathans and, you know, the Daves and the Erics and the Bruces, and I can go down the row, you know, I got hugs from everybody. I started writing this and I gave up and I was like, ah, forget it. And my mom was like, forget that, you always improvise, why do that? I was like, I always forget though, you know, I go home and I'm like, you know, I wanna remember, you know, I wanna say thank you on a healthy scale. You know, there's a lot of cool stories that have come out of this program. This summer I had to evict my father. You know, my father was in a real severe place of alcoholism. He was renting a unit I owned, a little condo, and he wouldn't pay me. He just went crazy one day, and he was like, fuck you, I'm done. I'm not paying you shit, I'm staying here. And he had somebody there, and then there's somebody left, and you know, he just looked really bad, my dad. His alcoholism got to his worst when he's 65. God be with him. And then I swear, I heard my sponsor's voice, because the first thing I thought, I heard my big fear, which was, oh, I'm going to lose my savings. I'll never make it to my master's. I'm not going to sell this. You know, I want to get my graduate degree. And I'm doing a career that I love, man. I get to help people, and it's been amazing. Help people heal. Like, that's been my sort of my mission statement that I learned from Primary Purpose. You know, I'm here to be to families of alcoholics. It's like, wow, it's tradition 5. Be understanding and encouraging, and also work the program myself. And I remember my sponsor, my first day working with him, we were on step 1, and he talked about tradition 6,
And he said, lest money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. He was like, what's your primary purpose, Dave? And I swear to God, in my mind, I think I said it out loud as a corny joke. I was like, I want to win an Oscar. You know, like, that was my primary purpose. I was that materialistic. I thought that would make me happy. And he said, well, how about if we make your primary purpose serenity today? So let's start with that. And I was like, God, I never even heard that word. I don't think I ever said it myself, you know? And I came in with a lot of nerve damage. You know, I got into yoga and meditation, and that's changed my energy system. You know, I'm a totally different man. And I'm blessed to be, you know, where I'm at. And the amount of serenity I have most of the time are right off of Al-Anon tools. You know, I work other programs that are really rich too, and they've given me vulnerability at a different level. But in terms of spirituality, it's always my Al-Anon foundation that has given me like a beautiful ashram to live out of. I'm really fortunate. Oh, how long more do I have?
15 minutes.
No, it can't be 15.
About 10 minutes.
10 minutes. Okay, thanks, Jimmy. Thanks, you guys. Oh, and thanks, Jimmy, for letting me speak. You know, I'm really grateful. I was talking to Jimmy outside of a cafe a few months ago, and he was like, hey, Dave, what got you into Al-Anon? You know, then I started telling him stuff. And he was like, we're going to get you to speak. We're going to get you to speak. You know, that story is pretty sick. That was his exact words. And I was like, all right, I'll speak. I'd be honored. I've always wanted to speak here just to say thank you on that level, you know. When I was with my dad, you know, that was the second thought that came to my mind. Was like, well, maybe God doesn't want me to have this. You know, can I surrender at that level? Like, would I be willing to let go of even this? You know, I've let go of my relationship with my dad. I don't try and control his drinking. I've had a lot of fun with my dad over the years, and I even made an amends because I tried to kill my dad. When I was 19, I attempted to kill him. I tried to kill him. And he went into a coma, and he came out of it, and he was nerve damaged. He couldn't move for like a month or 2 months, and he almost died. Like, he died, actually. I'm pretty confident he died, because when I checked his heart, I got scared, and I told my brother, I was like, get out of the room, dad's dead. And then my brother fell down crying, and he was 5 years younger than me. I helped raise him. And then I remember I just fell at my dad's feet crying. And I was praying. I was like, please, I made a big mistake. So I apologized to my dad for my behavior, but I had a lot of hate towards my father. You know, and I remember when I sat with my sponsor on that first day, he said, Dave, alcoholism is a disease. And he said, would you ever spit on a cancer patient? I was like, nah, I'd never do that. He was like, would you ever punch a cancer patient? I was like, no. I mean, the image of that looks just silly. You know, he was like, would you ever kick them or hurt them or throw them out of your life for having cancer? I was like, no, I'd never do that. And he goes, so why are you doing that to your father? Your father has a disease and he doesn't know what he's doing. You know, and he recommended I get into the facts about alcoholism. You know, and I want to just share real quick because I started studying on addiction. I found it fascinating. And I just couldn't believe like how the primal brain, the midbrain, hijacks the frontal cortex, the reasoning center, the rationale place. And so if somebody really fires up their survival brain, it's very hard to get back online their awareness brain. And so they have very little ability to switch. And they're usually just living in the survival brain. They don't even know what they're doing. That's a real saying. The ancient prophet said that, you know, forgive them, they know not what they do. And it's like, oh, I can see from that perspective most of the time today. It's like, oh, this person does not know what they do. That's why sometimes I'll have a sponsee stand in front of a wall. And I'll be like, tell the wall to move. Try and move the wall. Try and do this to the wall. Tell the wall it sucks. Tell the wall that. Are they changing? Yeah. You can't get the wall to change. And if that person's in that kind of place, then I need to take care of myself. You know, and it starts with serenity. And I need to get my mindset in a good space. You know, that's what the steps have done to me. They give me a principled life to live by most of the time. You know, when I'm there, I mean, sometimes it's just second nature, which is pretty cool. And the amount of joy I have in my heart, I've never been so vulnerable. And like, I could have a good buddy like Rudy, and we could cry and like tell each other our deepest pains from childhood, from men who have done us wrong, and like heal that together. It's been amazing. I have those kind of beautiful, you know, vulnerable conversations. And then even to work in a profession together. We started my morning with sitting down, and they hired him at a place I work at. And I thought, wow, you know, this is what we've been talking about for a few years. And I just was like, wow, what a miraculous life it's been. I came in, I had a six-figure salary when I left the bank. I used to be a bank manager. And I came in here and I was lost everything. I lost my marriage, I lost that. I remember I heard a guy share, and he was like, it's been a few years, but I've gotten everything back and it's 10 times better than everything I've ever had in my life. And I swear I felt so far from that guy. I was like, God, I'll never have that. But they say, keep coming back. I'm going to keep coming back. And I feel like that guy today. You know, it's really neat, right? And I didn't have to pay a lot of money. It's pretty cool, you know? And what I did, though, was I did the work time and time again, because the way my nervous system is wired, all the damage that was done to me growing up and, you know, traumas that occurred and the consistent traumas had wired my nervous system a certain way. And now to be able to come out of that most of the time and be vulnerable and like be able to cry and be able to love people, you know, and be able to be a good partner to my last relationship, it was hard for her to accept that. That was a hard thing for my partner. And for my dad, like just to be able to love my pop and be like, hey, pop, I love you, but, you know, I don't have to put up with stuff. I can have boundaries. You know, and I had to evict him. I go, if you can't pay the rent, you got to move out. And I've got to sell this place, man. I want to go for my master's. And he said, I was like, you know, he didn't call back or nothing. And I remember we went camping that summer, and I just had fun. You know, I went boogie boarding, I went roller skating the next weekend, and I thought, like, F it. Like, I'm turning it over to God. If I'm meant to have it, it's going to work. If not, then I know that I can go to court. I know I can do things. And it was really cool. Like, it ended up working out. But one day, a few months later, my dad just called me up, and he was like, I'm sorry, I've done you wrong. And this is, God, my alcoholism is at its worst. I don't know what to do, Dave. I'm going to move out. I hurt my son. You've always been here for me. I've hurt you. And then he moved out. And that wasn't easy. That took like another 30 days of being patient. And him like, I'm going to wait another month. And I was like, come on, Dad. We talked about moving out. I gave you an eviction notice. Don't make me get you arrested, man. And then I should have just had him arrested. You know, that's me enabling. You know, I should have had him. I even had it a long time. I was like, don't feed the bird cage. Don't feed the bird in the cage. Don't give it any food. And I was like, damn, he's right. You know. But it was very uncomfortable. You know, and it brought up a lot of trauma again. I had to process that. And there was nights where I was crying. You know, and I felt like a little kid because my dad, you know, brought that back. And the cool thing is that I have tools to, you know, process it. And I don't have to act crazy around it anymore. You know, I have serenity most of the time. And that's the sanity that I never got. I heard some guys talking last night, second step, came to believe in the power greater than ourselves to restore us to sanity. But it's like, if I didn't have sanity before, how can I ever be restored to that? Right? I did have it when I was really young. God bless my mom. She'd take us to Greece and we'd have an awesome time. You know, and today I can have a healthy relationship with my mom and be able to make my amends, living amends to her, and also see what kind of trauma I put on my own mom. I acted like an idiot most of my life. I was very spoiled. And I remember I used to blame her for my dad's stuff. You know, I used to project it on her. And she was working 7 days a week. You know, 7 days a week for years I watched my mom work and slave. And half of me adored her for that. I knew what she was doing, and the other half was so pained and bitter. It was hard to know how to switch gears, and I didn't have any sort of empathy. Nobody to empathize and, like, let me cry. Let me be vulnerable. So I'm grateful, Ma. I love you, and I'm proud. I'm very lucky. You know, I told her the other day, Ma, sometimes I'm a real asshole to you. You know, I said, I'm sorry. You know, and this year I've been really good. You know, she's the only person that I, you know. She's like, yeah. She's like, Jesus came through. And she's sleeping in my bed next to me for 4 weeks. And it's been amazing. You know, we've been having real heart-to-heart conversations and like hearing how she grew up and stuff. A lot of healing going on. And, you know, it's cool. I'm only 5 years into the program. I look forward to my next five and my next five. I wanted to also thank all the men in the meeting. You know, the papichulos and the Rs, the pirates, and the Bruces and the Navidads. You know, we even sing Kumbaya in this meeting. One day, like 2 years ago, a year ago, some newcomer came in and he was like, oh God, this is amazing. I've never seen men like you. You know, and Paul, I love you, Paul. Thank you. He said, I thought you guys were going to sing Kumbaya. And nobody said anything. At the end of the meeting, we all stood up, we put our arms around each other, and everybody looked around. And they were like, Kumbaya, my Lord. Kumbaya. Yeah, you guys remember that? You guys remember that? Yep. Jack remembers. Huh? You guys remember that, right? That was amazing. I didn't see anybody like, kumbaya, kumbaya. You know? And this is that kind of men's meeting where like 100 men, you know, 100 men line up, or 50 men line up after the speaker each week. For years, I've watched them hug the guy that shares. 20, 30, 40 men deep for 10 minutes. We have a 10-minute break because everybody's hugging. You know, and they say, I love you, I love you, I love you. And I was like, man, I never knew anything like that. I was always scared. And now, you know, I welcome hugs. Sometimes I even put on the gratitude list. There's a bunch of guys who are on the gratitude list. And I'll put like, yeah, tonight I'm getting 50 fucking hugs. What? I need it. You know, my ex-wife comes out of nowhere and she's like, ding, 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 ding. Damn it. Where does she come from? She's so short. She just pops out of the bushes. She's like, you? Psh. Yeah, I'm like, I'm powerless. This is God's will for me. I'm going to accept it right now. It's the lesson for me to be a better man. But you know, when I put on that lens, my sponsor taught me in the beginning to be like, this is a gift, David. This is a gift. G-I-F-T. You're getting information for thought. And I was like, And then one day it dawned on me. I was like, how if I change it to God's information for transformation? You know, and every time my ex-wife came at me, it was another opportunity to work on communication, work on assertiveness, work on myself. Like, why is this triggering me? Why is it, I had mommy issues. That was the problem. I never worked the deeper work. You know, and I get in touch with all that and be like, oh, man. And healing through that, you know, it was a gift and it still is a gift. And when she acts out, sometimes I'm like, oh, God, help me. It's not all the time, though. We've been on vacations together. We've had great times. And she's asked me to get back together, too. And that was hard to be able to say, like, oh, I'm not in that place, you know. I've moved on, and I'm dating somebody really nice right now. Nah, I'm joking. I'm not. I'm actually single. If there's any single men. Yeah. This is the only business meeting that stands too. I'm gonna wrap in a moment. You never see a business meeting where everybody stands. You know, we huddle here, and the guys stand up, and they're all in a big group. There's no chairs. Just guys standing and talking about the business. All right, vote. I always feel like I'm back in the cave days. I'm like, yeah, we're taking care of spiritual business here. Yeah, so I wanted to say thanks, you know. And this is an interesting meeting because nobody's here from La Cañada. This is the only I don't get it. How many people here from La Cañada? Raise your hand. Look, one guy, and Dad. That's it. Right? Is that crazy? We come here to hide from our wives, that's why. We're like, we go to La Cañada, nobody's there. The crazy women and the crazy men. You know, the men are married to men too in the meetings, so I don't want to keep you guys out. But like, my crazy husband. Let's hide in La Cañada. We talk about them. And this is the only Al-Anon meeting in the world where men, they don't crochet here. They paint CV pipes. That's a shout out to Bob. I thought I was gonna get you on that one, Bob. Love you, man. Thank you for your double winner work, man. God bless you. I'm gonna wrap with that. I love you guys. I'm really grateful. I'm gonna wrap with this one quote that I learned from One Day at a Time. Khalil Gibran, the poet, says, I've learned silence from the talkative. I've learned tolerance from the intolerant. And I've learned kindness from the unkind. I should not be ungrateful to those teachers. You know, everybody around us is a profound teacher. And I'm grateful that I get to come in here with men that are so supportive and secure and loving. I get to see Tim running around in his, you know, outfit sometimes and his signs and Tom's giggle. And I'm just so grateful. I love you guys. And thank you for letting me be part of the program and part of a meeting like this. I'm very grateful. Thanks, everyone. Love you.